This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Bracing for more flooding. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, September 17. Thanks for being with us. And here's what we have for you this hour.
Residents of North Carolina, after being battered by Florence over the weekend, aren't out of the woods yet since rain-swollen rivers have yet to crest.
A California woman has come forward to say Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her in high school. What's this mean for his nomination?
The National Transportation Safety Board explains why a series of gas explosions rocked three towns north of Boston last week.
And as the Trump administration threatens more tariffs on Chinese goods, businesses unite in a lobbying effort against them.
So one of the most prominent anti-tariff industries right now is the agricultural industry. They are actually the subject, or they've been hit by some of these retaliatory tariffs from China. So you have a lot of these groups in kind of traditionally farm belt states in the Midwest who are trying to work through their lawmakers and other avenues to oppose the tariffs.
Wall Street Journal reporter Andy Durin on lobbying efforts against tariffs. He's here in about 2 minutes. The remnants of Hurricane Florence soaked North Carolina over the weekend, cutting off the coastal city of Wilmington. Tens of thousands of homes have been damaged. At least 18 people have been killed. Some rivers haven't even crested yet. The National Weather Service says Florence, downgraded to a tropical depression, has dumped up to 40 inches of rain on parts of North Carolina since Thursday. Norman Bryson is director of emergency services for Onslow County.
We've had people on top of the roofs of their cars. They drove into flooded roadways. We are going and picking them off the roofs of their cars with helicopters. We have had people who have been on tops of their houses. We've sent high clearance vehicles into areas to pull people away where the floodwaters are coming up.
Some rivers were not expected to crest until today or tomorrow. More than 900 people were rescued from rising floodwaters, most on swift boats in Wilmington, which is a coastal city of about 117,000 people on a peninsula between the Cape Fear River and the Atlantic Ocean. A woman who has accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexually assaulting her at a party back in high school has gone public. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The allegation by Christine Blasey Ford in an article published by the Washington Post yesterday could change the confirmation progress for Mr. Kavanaugh. That's because Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona says he won't vote yes until he hears more. A confirmation vote is scheduled for Thursday. Mrs. Ford is now saying that 36 years ago, Mr. Kavanaugh and a friend pulled her into a bedroom and claims that Mr. Kavanaugh pinned her down, groped her, and attempted to remove her clothing before she escaped. He has denied the allegation. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. California Senator Dianne Feinstein, who has known of the allegations since July, did not raise the issue during a confirmation hearing earlier this month. The White House plans to announce within the next few days tariffs on as much as $200 billion in Chinese goods. It's a move designed to further squeeze Beijing before another round of negotiations proposed by the U.S. Meanwhile, from California apple growers to Maine lobstermen, businesses are joining forces in a lobbying campaign to try to persuade President Trump that tariffs are hurting U.S. industries. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Andy Durin. Andy, what are we seeing here?
So what we're seeing is a whole host of industries and industry groups are working together to speak out against, not only to speak out against Trump's tariffs, but also the retaliatory tariffs that his trade actions have prompted from some other countries, namely China. So it's kind of a two-pronged effort, both to denounce the Trump's trade actions and the kind of the tariffs he's placing on imports from China because of the impact that's having on domestic industry in the United States, and then also to speak out against the impact that there, or the response that those tariffs are prompting from other countries like China.
Who are the industries with the big voices right now?
So one of the most prominent anti-tariff industries right now is the agricultural industry. They are actually the subject, or they've been hit by some of these retaliatory tariffs from China. So you have a lot of these groups in kind of traditionally farm belt states in the Midwest who are organizing and working with and trying to work through their lawmakers and other avenues to oppose the tariffs in hopes that if the United States were to end some of its trade actions against China, then China would relent on its retaliatory actions.
All right. That's quite the tug of war, I guess. How much pain have they expressed that they're feeling?
So a lot of these industries kind of both agricultural and otherwise, there were hearings a couple weeks ago now at the U.S. Trade Representative where industry leaders and industry kind of organizers and also business owners themselves had the opportunity to come to Washington and testify about the impact that U.S. tariffs on China were having on their businesses. And I was there and I heard from, there were a lot of people who testified about how, you know, some of these tariffs could really cut into their, really their viability as a business. You know, some of these companies are buying a lot of their components and their, you know, some of the materials for their products from China. And when the price of those materials goes up 25%, that becomes a really big issue for a lot of companies. So you heard about companies considering laying off employees or scaling back on some of their kind of, you know, planned expansions and that type of activity.
Got it. Are we aware that the White House is listening or sympathetic?
I don't have a great answer to that question. I do know that the, I mean, so far they have kind of plowed ahead with a lot of their planned tariffs, especially with China. They're kind of considering basically placing a tariff on every Chinese import, but that's not stopping some of these trade groups from doing their best to try and influence the White House. You know, you have some trade groups taking out or putting on television advertisements that will run on Fox and Friends or during Fox and Friends, which President Trump is known to watch with some frequency. So they're doing their best, but so far the White House has kind of moved forward with a lot of its tariff plans.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Andy Durin. He's written a piece entitled U.S. Businesses Ramp Up Lobbying Against Trump's Tariffs. All right, so how big of a deal is this? I think you mentioned a lot of groups kind of are involved for the first time or spending unusual amounts of money.
Yeah, so the lobbying effort is unusual in that it's been kind of a pretty sudden and major increase in lobbying activity in this specific policy area. So as we report in the story, there's been roughly a threefold or more increase in the number of entities, business entities that are employing lobbyists in this trade sector. So it's a pretty large spike. And another kind of caveat or interesting or unusual angle to this is that, you know, historically on major policy issues, one of the main avenues for lobbying or influencing policy is through Congress and working with lawmakers there, and maybe you know lobbying firms employ former members of Congress and their staffs, you know, who have expertise and knowledge of the Hill. But this is kind of a unique situation in which the White House has been invoking these national security clauses that allows it to operate unilaterally on these, on, or can impose these tariffs unilaterally. So suddenly it's kind of been a scramble or a rush to, you know, work through the White House and influence members of the White House on this policy issue.
Thanks, Andy. Wall Street Journal reporter Andy Durin. It's 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct, but make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. Hey, glad you could be with us. The National Transportation Safety Board says the deadly gas explosions north of Boston last week occurred after too much natural gas was pumped into a section of pipe. NTSB Chairman Robert Sumwalt says that caused the combustible fuel to leak into homes. State and federal authorities are investigating after at least 60 fires and explosions traced to gas lines erupted Thursday in Lawrence, Andover, and North Andover, killing an 18-year-old man and injuring others. The NTSB believes that gas flowed into homes at significantly greater rates and pressure than it was supposed to.
They will be looking at the type of appliances and the age of appliances. These are items that use gas in a home, things like a furnace, a stove, an oven, a hot water heater.
Mr. Somewalt said Columbia Gas had been in the process of replacing old cast iron pipes with new plastic ones. Meanwhile, thousands of people were cleared to return home yesterday after being evacuated. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, with Wilmington cut off from the rest of North Carolina by still rising floodwaters from Florence, officials plan to airlift food and water to a city of nearly 120,000 people as rescuers elsewhere pull inland residents from homes threatened by swollen rivers. The spreading disaster claimed additional lives yesterday, with at least 18 people confirmed dead. This man lives in Cumberland County, North Carolina, where water is rushing down the streets.
Problem with the road out there, the tile is stopped up. So the water, instead of going through the tile, it comes down the road and washes the foundation out from under our homes.
Other states are in the storm's path this week, including Virginia, West Virginia, and Ohio. Meanwhile, the world's most powerful storm this year skidded into mainland China yesterday after claiming at least 64 lives in the Philippines and pummeling Hong Kong. In the Philippines, rescuers are searching for victims of landslides responsible for most of the deaths there. The typhoon packed sustained winds as high as 170 miles an hour, equivalent to a Category 5 hurricane. There's been a fatal shark attack in Massachusetts. 26-year-old Arthur Medici, an engineering student who was engaged to be married, was bitten by a shark off a Cape Cod beach on Saturday while boogie boarding and later died at a hospital. He was the state's first shark attack fatality in more than 80 years. Judge Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation for the Supreme Court is taking an uncertain turn as Republican senators express concern over a woman's private-turned-public allegation that a drunken Kavanaugh groped her and tried to take off her clothes at a party when they were teenagers. The White House and other Kavanaugh supporters had dismissed the allegation of sexual misconduct when it was initially conveyed in a private letter. But with a name now and disturbing details, the accusation raises the prospect of congressional Republicans defending President Trump's nominee ahead of crucial midterm elections. The Predator was the winner at the box office in its first weekend in theaters. 20th Century Fox says the film earned $24 million. But with an $88 million production price tag, the movie may need international receipts to offset the cost. Despite coming in number one, audiences rated The Predator a C+, echoing the response of film critics.
Really? Well, I know you didn't see a movie this weekend.
I did not.
Because after the crushing defeat of Rutgers to Kansas in college football on Saturday, you were curled up in the fetal position mourning for the rest of the weekend.
That pretty much explained. Yeah.
That's pretty much how it went down. And the Jets and Giants brought no relief whatsoever.
Just the worst weekend ever. Horrible.
Football season has been canceled early
here
in the Northeast.
Week three, I'm giving up.
It's 23 minutes after the hour. Glad you could join us. Misery has a lot of company these days. People around the world are more miserable than they've ever been, according to a new survey called the Negative Experience Index from Gallup. More from Katie Hill, editor at Moneyish.com. Katie, what's going on?
Basically, people around the world are more miserable than they've ever been. There's more stress and worry and sadness and anger. It's just not good. And this is the highest level of this that they've seen since they began measuring this a decade ago. So we're basically at peak misery.
Jeez. Anybody put a reason or a couple of reasons for that?
Well, they said they didn't really know exactly why. But what Gallup told me is that, you know, there's a lot of countries in turmoil right now, and because we're so connected these days, that they think it just kind of spreads and seeps through the world. But they don't know. But I mean, listen, these are the stats, which is crazy. I mean, 38% said that they worried in the past day. 37% felt stress. 31% felt physical pain in the past 24 hours, and then 23% and 20% felt sadness and anger. And what's really interesting is in the U.S., sometimes these numbers are worse. Like the people in the U.S. compared to people around the world, more worried, more stressed. There's the same level of sadness, but we're more worried and stressed than average. So I don't know. Something's also going on here.
Yeah, that's weird because I'm broadly speaking in the U.S., I mean, job market's in good shape.
Yep.
Wages are on the rise at least a little bit. Stock market's up. The economy's humming along. I mean, because we normally, like, say we vote or we're driven by the way we feel in our wallets or bank accounts. And I don't know, by most accounts, things seem okay.
Yeah, but you're exactly right, except for they're not, right? This stat really stuck to me. 49% of Americans said that they were stressed a lot in the previous day. That's compared to 37% worldwide. And there's only one country on Earth whose number was more than that, and that was Greece. So we are more stressed than pretty much everyone on Earth, minus people living in Greece, which is, it's impossible to know why, but disturbing nonetheless.
I'm speaking with Katie Hill, editor at moneyish.com. She's written a piece about how people around the world are more miserable than any point in history. All right, so you did come up with a handful of things to kind of lower that stress and anxiety. Like what?
Yeah, simple things, right? Breathe deeply. I know people are like, oh, whatever. But this actually has been shown by tons of research to calm yourself down. Just take slow, deep breaths when you feel stressed. These are things you can do every single day to lower your stress, because most of us feel stress every day. So that's one thing. You got to know what's triggering your stress, which sounds obvious, but is there a particular environment, a person, a situation, your job? I don't know. But you got to identify, you know, what's triggering that and try to get yourself out of it if you can help it. Again, 49% of us are stressed, so these are things to think about. And then de-stressing your workday, because work is one of the number one things that Americans say is stressing them out. One thing, try to make friends with your coworkers. Those kind of relationships can help protect you against stress. So even though they might be driving you crazy, you know, try to find something good in them, try to befriend them. And then also, you know, when you're at work, use your lunch break to de-stress. You actually should take some time away from your desk, away from your computer, have lunch, go outside, walk around. And then look, just don't forget the basics, right? Get enough sleep, eat healthy, exercise. Those are the number one things. You know, I know it's hard to fit it all in, and when you're stressed out, it's even harder.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at moneyish.com. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, September 17. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Parts of the Carolinas brace for more flooding as rivers have yet to crest after Florence. A woman comes forward to claim Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her in high school. Speculation SpaceX today could offer details on a planned passenger trip around the moon. Buffalo Bills defensive back Vontae Davis quit at halftime of yesterday's loss to the Chargers. And what a North Carolina couple did with their flowers when Florence postponed their wedding. That story in about 20 minutes. South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster says his state is bracing for what the rivers of North Carolina will send to his state. More now from Jimmy Watts, who's a resident of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, with how his community fared during Florence and what he's anticipating in the next few days. Jimmy, what have you been through?
A couple of areas are pretty bad, though. I mean, you still got emergency crews out working. You know, luckily ourselves, we have power. We lasted through it, but a lot of people in the area lost power. You know, storm surges are still yet to come. I mean, they're talking about rivers going to be, you know, peaking, cresting, and they're going to be probably putting a lot of floods in our area. You know, again, luckily I'm safe, but a lot of people are, you know, they got some problems going on here, you know. But right now, as of now, the sun actually peaked out today for the first time.
Wow. Tell me what it was like in the couple of days beforehand. Did you and the family debate about whether or not to evacuate, or were you going to stay the whole time?
Actually, we were debating left and right. I was going to stay the whole time. I was actually trying to send my wife, my son, and my mother-in-law out to Georgia, you know, because that's apparently was going to be safe. But my wife and actually my son decided he didn't want to leave me. They didn't want to leave me alone in the house because of what was supposedly coming. And, you know, I mean, luckily we made it through. They didn't have to make that trek. But a lot of people took off. A lot of people seek shelter in, you know, Florida, Georgia. A lot of my friends were gone, you know, but it was very scary, let me tell you.
What was the, did you have like a few hours where you thought, uh-oh, well, we should have gotten out of here? Like, did the storm reach like a scary level or no?
Well, you know what? What they were saying on TV and you started hearing a wind pick up, I was more nervous about my family, you know, obviously, and, you know, you wanted to get them out, but, you thought, though, what was coming. And the scary part is at night when you can't see everything.
Yeah.
You know, you're out there with a light, and all of a sudden you're seeing a tree, like, you know, bending ways that have never been bent before. You kind of get scared, you know.
Mm. We're speaking with Jimmy Watts, who lives in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, assessing Hurricane Florence. So I know you grew up in New Jersey. You've been in Myrtle Beach only, what, probably less than 3 years at this point. When these types of storms come through, and I know you had Matthew a couple of years ago, do you ever think, man, this was dumb to come down here?
You know what? Actually, no, the storms I'm not worried about as much as the taxes back home. Sorry, but, yeah, it was, I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of people down here, they stick together. I mean, I was back home for Sandy. I lived in Jersey, lived there my whole life. And I know going to the stores, you know, people are going crazy. I understand it's a hurricane and everything. Back home in Jersey, a lot of people are kind of mean, you know. But down here, everybody wants to help you carry things, open doors, you know. Hey, let me come on. I had a guy come over and nail boards to my windows and stuff, you know. Everybody down here is a little bit different than back home. They really want to help out down here, I guess, because they're all prepared for it.
Yeah. So did you go that far? Did you actually board up your windows?
We had to board up a couple of the front ones because our house, the way it's set, is it's in the middle of a path that wind could be blowing. But a lot of people boarded up a lot of stuff.
What do you anticipate in the next couple of days? Storm surge, river problems, creeks?
Well, our house and, you know, our area, we should be fine, like I said. But, yeah, they're talking about the rivers are going to start cresting probably Wednesday. And once they start, I mean, yeah, I-95 is flooded in the area. You know, a lot of the highways get flooded real quick around here, and some of these houses get flooded really bad. So,
I know you said
we're lucky where we are, but a lot of people are definitely going to be in some desperate need of help.
I know you're only like 7-8 miles from the beach, and that's fairly low country as it is.
We're saved because we're on the other side of what they call the intercoastal waterway.
Yeah,
and that will kind of save us from any kind of major storm surge. I don't know if it'll actually reach it, but the water's up to the dunes. You know, the full, like what you're seeing on TV, North Carolina is probably got, you know, hammered a lot more than we did. Mm-hmm. But you know, we got a fair share of getting hit.
Thanks, Jimmy. Jimmy Watts from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Monday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, there were some strange things that happened during the second Sunday of NFL football. We got another dose of Fitzmagic. Kickers had a rough day all around, though the Browns, Giants, and Jets all lost, so some things were status quo. But the strangest thing that happened had to be when one player quit right in the middle of the game, put on his street clothes, and headed out the door. Buffalo Bills cornerback Vontae Davis, apparently upset with his substandard play on the field, says he's done with football 2 games into his 10th season in the league. Davis, who had signed a 1-year, $5 million contract this past offseason to play with the Bills, apparently decided he'd had enough after the team went down 28-6 during the first half of yesterday's game against the San Diego Chargers, stunning his coaches and teammates with his abrupt decision. Davis later released a statement saying that he, quote, didn't mean any disrespect to the team, but that he shouldn't be out there anymore, and he wanted to walk away from the game healthy rather than limp away when it was too late.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Starts putting on his, you know, I don't know, hops in the shower at halftime, puts on his street clothes and walks out.
Yep.
Peace out, guys.
I'll see you later, guys.
Good luck with the rest of the game. You're on your own.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, and he's leaving a lot of money on the table, obviously, so there's that part, so it's not like he's going to get paid to not be there.
Yeah.
Like, leaving millions of dollars on the table.
Yeah, which is how it works for the rest of us.
Right. But, I respect, you know, his decision to leave before things get bad for him, because we've heard a lot of bad things happen to NFL players who stick around too long, but he could have waited 30 minutes, I suppose.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. That was, you know, I'm sure the team, who was already down 28-6 at that point, probably didn't need to hear that.
Right.
That one of their defensive players quit and went home.
Yeah.
And it probably did not help the team.
How about just calling like a private player meeting?
Yeah.
Like, guys, I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good. Right. You know, he's coming off a bad groin injury, I think. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not the same guy anymore.
Right, after the game. Right, when the game's over. Yes, that's probably...
It's incredibly selfish.
And there are some of us, Gordon, that might not get our money's worth if we visit an all-you-can-eat restaurant, but there are others who might make an eatery suddenly close up shop if they see them coming for fear they might be eaten out of business. This gentleman falls into the latter category. Fox News says a German triathlete was banned from an all-you-can-eat sushi restaurant after eating nearly 100 plates of fish. An Ironman competitor named Yaroslav Bobrowski visited a sushi restaurant in Bavaria last weekend for a never-ending meal. According to a local newspaper, Bobrowski went to the restaurant and paid around $18.50 for the buffet. The former bodybuilder sat down at a table and started eating and did not stop until he had consumed nearly 100 plates of sushi. Now, why was he so hungry, you ask? Bobrowski, who works as a software engineer by day, follows an extreme diet where he does not eat for 20 hours and then eats, quote, until I'm full. The until I'm full part is apparently what drove the restaurant to ban the athlete. The owner told Bobrowski personally that he was no longer allowed to eat there because of his costly habits.
Man.
100 plates.
100 plates.
Now, he'd only not eaten for 20 hours. It wasn't like he hadn't eaten for 20 days.
Yeah.
So that's that seems like an awful lot, even for fasting for 20 hours.
Right, right.
Now, he's a triathlete. He burns a lot of calories. Right. We understand that. That still seems like a lot.
Man.
Like, you know, you'd have to run, you Listen, know, a couple of triathlons to burn off that much sushi, I think.
You're coming off naked and afraid, you know, after 21 days?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
I could see that.
Yeah.
But, man, 20 hours. I wonder how often he does that, by the way.
I mean, he apparently was a frequent visitor to this restaurant.
Okay.
You know, he was a regular customer. But I guess they were, you know, this was not the first time. So I guess they were sick and tired of losing, you know, a couple hundred bucks on him every time he walked through the door.
I could see, you know, maybe they could make a viral video of it.
Right.
Like, wow, look what this guy does at our restaurant.
Yeah.
But after more than once, a month or something like that.
Plus, you might be inviting more extreme eaters to your restaurant if you do that.
Very good. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, during the Dell annual sale, we're offering up to 40% off select PCs with Intel Core processors and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Special financing available to qualified business customers when using Dell Business Credit. Go to dell.com/dbcpromos for details.
Glad you could be with us. Welcome into Monday. Employees are becoming more conscious about keeping their social media feeds and emails professional since there have been plenty of high-profile cases of workers getting fired or disciplined for what they've tweeted or let slip into a company memo. But one place many people are still courting digital disaster is in their text messages. Almost three-quarters of employees surveyed by the mobile messaging provider Tiger Text said they use texting as a work messaging tool. But the problem is many companies don't offer much guidance in the acceptable ways to text at work. Moneyish.com put together some tips. Number one, ask your coworker or client's permission. Number two, limit texts to, say, asking a quick question or sharing an important detail. This is not where you gripe about the boss. Number three, obviously, avoid anything that could be seen as inappropriate. Number four, only text during work hours and on work days. And number five, if a coworker sends you an awkward or inappropriate text, don't get sucked in. Either don't respond or suggest a talk in person the next day. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Port in Florence drenched North Carolina with more downpours yesterday, cutting off the coastal city of Wilmington, damaging tens of thousands of homes, and threatening worse flooding as rivers fill to the bursting point. The death toll rose to at least 18. Florence has dumped up to 40 inches of rain on parts of North Carolina since Thursday and continues to produce widespread heavy rain over much of North Carolina and eastern South Carolina. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper.
We're seeing epic flooding in North Carolina. This is a state that has been used to floods, but we've never seen floods like this and this widespread.
More than 900 people have been rescued from rising floodwaters and 15,000 remain in shelters in the state. A college professor has gone public for the first time to accuse President Trump's Supreme Court pick of sexually assaulting her in the 1980s, prompting calls by opposition Democrats to postpone the nomination vote. Christine Blasey Ford initially detailed the allegations about Brett Kavanaugh in confidential letters. Now, Ford told the Washington Post she decided to waive her anonymity because she felt her civic responsibility was outweighing her anguish and terror about retaliation. After the basic outlines of the story emerged in the media last week, Kavanaugh released a statement on Friday denying the incident. A U.S. Border Patrol supervisor is being held in Texas on a $2.5 million bond after his arrest over the weekend on charges of killing four women after a fifth would-be victim escaped and alerted authorities. 35-year-old Juan Ortiz is being held in Laredo after he was found hiding in his truck in a hotel parking lot early Saturday morning. The alleged victims are believed to be prostitutes. If you want to be happy, head to Hawaii or Utah. Wallet Hub ranked all 50 states on happiness factors, including emotional and physical well-being, environment, and community, and determined that Hawaii is number one due partly to its low share of adult depression. The second happiest state is Utah, which boasts a number one ranking in the work environment measurement and also has low divorce rates. Rounding out the top five, Minnesota, North Dakota, and California at the bottom due to high levels of adult depression, more work hours, and high divorce rates, Louisiana, Arkansas, and West Virginia.
I see your Hawaii. I see it. Kauai, specifically.
Yeah?
I've got that circled now after my visit there in over the summer.
You experienced the happiness.
I did experience the happiness and chill of Hawaii. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. With all the time and effort that go into wedding planning, having to reschedule might sound like many engaged couples' worst nightmare, but Yahoo News says when Amber and Chris of Concord, North Carolina had to postpone their wedding thanks to Hurricane Florence, helping others was the first thing on their minds. Rescheduling vendors like catering services, music, photographers can be a huge headache, not to mention contacting guests. And things get even trickier when it's simply too late to cancel a time-sensitive order. But that doesn't mean those things have to go to waste. When Amber and Chris couldn't use their wedding flowers, the couple donated them to the Atrium Health Levine Cancer Institute in Concord. They didn't want to be identified by their full names. Charlotte's WSOC-TV reported that after finishing their treatments, each patient got to choose a floral arrangement from the flowers the couple had ordered. Their rescheduled wedding will be next month, by the way. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.